Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Well, folks, Andrew Tate was in a Romanian jail for like 3 months, and they ended up releasing him. It's not clear where the case stands right now, but he did his first big interview in a long time with Patrick Bet-David on his podcast, like a 5-hour interview. It was kind of interesting, so we're going to go through some of it right now.
We watched a BBC interview with you. The first question they asked you was, what's the first question? Hey, you've been accused of
serious crimes,
rape or something like that. Right off the bat, they ask that question of you.
They walk in here all smiles and happy, all smiley faces, trying to take me off guard. I already had my list of questions, right? It's all going to be nice and easy. I sit down and they instantly attack me. They put the cameras on first and they attack me, expecting me to stutter and make a fool of myself. Yes, I destroyed the BBC, but of course I did, because I'm smarter than all of them. But why should I have to rely on my wit and intellect to destroy BBC with their research team and their plan, their deliberate plan to try and annihilate my, not only my credibility, but my life? They are trying to put me back in jail, these people. They're not dishonest. They're genuinely evil, and they don't give a shit.
Okay, so he happens to be correct about the fact that getting sandbagged by media, that is a regular part of the job. One of the points he makes in the interview is that those same people from BBC will interview people who actually have committed alleged sexual crimes. And if those people happen to fall on the same side of the political aisle, those people get treated with a certain level of kid gloves. That's nothing new. You know, him being very aggressive about the BBC, I know there are people who get frustrated with that, but the BBC deserves it.
They psyoped the world into believing they should be afraid of the common cold. They psyoped the world into this. And if you think about how difficult that would be to do, how difficult would it be to psyop the entire population of Earth? Well, what you do is you just lie on repeat, and you don't allow anyone to say anything counter to it without hurting them the same way I've been hurt. And you just psyop them. It's actually amazing, because now I use that exact same psyop on people. Mm-hmm. I love it. So when I sit with someone who's not matrix-minded, when I sit with someone who is matrix-minded, like when the BBC walked in here, I'm like, do you all have your vaccinations? Social distancing.
Did you actually ask?
100%. Social distancing, please. And they look at me like I'm crazy. Well, how am I crazy? 2 years ago, you were telling me to do this. Now when I repeat your own worldview to you, I'm crazy. Well, if I'm crazy, guess what? You're a f***ing liar. Because you lied the whole time. So either you're a liar or I'm not. You know, how could I be nuts? Put your f***ing mask on. If I ever talk to any of these clowns again, they're going to be fully masked up.
Again. What he's saying here is correct. I mean, there was a double standard, and there is a double standard. The same, but this is true even from the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, very clearly, a lot of these people were partying in private with all of their friends, while meanwhile telling the entire population that everybody had to get vaccinated, like everybody. There was no distinction between old and young. Now, listen, where I disagree with Andrew Tate on this is that the statistics show that COVID-19 was really dangerous for old people. But where he's right is the lie that it was really dangerous for young people, which is still a lie. I mean, just the other day, Gerald Nadler, the congressperson from New York, said that we should force 2-year-olds to mask. Well, I didn't see him masked while he was saying it. It is amazing, and it is dishonest.
Especially before Elon had Twitter, when you couldn't say the truth online, when you couldn't say my eyes see X on the internet without going to jail or losing your account or getting a hate speech charge in the UK or some garbage, they're controlling what you think. And on a long enough time frame, what you think becomes true. We all believe 2 + 2 = 4. But with a hard enough psyop, if you can't say that, if you have to say it's 5, on a long enough time frame, math breaks down and everyone's just going to believe that 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah, again, what he is saying here about the consistency of messaging, that if the media say over and over and over a thing and then force you to say the thing over and over and over, the most obvious example of this is the newfound determination to suggest that gender is entirely malleable. Right? But they're constant attempts to say things that are not true are true, and then you get punished if you refuse to say them. So he's certainly right about that. And there's no question that social media has been a big part of that. It's why Musk taking over Twitter has been such a cataclysmically large move for free speech. Because there are so many social media outlets that legitimately censor you from saying things that are clearly and objectively true.
Do you think you're more relevant today than you were on September 1st? Is that strategy they're implementing working?
No, they're failing. And the reason they're failing is because God's put me in a position where I have to lead from the front. I think that in the days of old, when politics used to mean something, politics, I believe in politics as long as the leader of the country charges on his horse at the enemy at the front. Then you're allowed to be king. Then I'll listen to your laws. That's politics. When you send other people's kids to die in a war and you sit on your ass, that's not politics to me. But now I'm in a position where I'm spearheading, by God's plan, the rights of basically every man on earth. They could do this to anybody. So I think any man with a brain who's thinking is looking at my position and going, they could hit me or my friends or my son or my dad the same way they're hitting this guy. And that builds a degree of affinity among small audience. So no, they failed. They failed and they made a hero out of me, which is what I'm actually scared of.
Again, the attempt to suppress Tate obviously has failed. I mean, he's obviously correct about this. And there was an attempt by broad scale social media to basically unperson Tate. And it has been a dramatic failure because in the areas where people were still getting his message, he got larger and larger and larger, which is why the answer to bad speech has always been counter speech. It has never been silencing. And the fact that there's so many people who sit at the top of the social media funnels now who have decided what you can hear and what you can't hear, it's dangerous in the sense that they are able to, on the one hand, really suppress the message. But on the other hand, they make underground heroes out of people like Tate by doing exactly that.
But masculinity as a whole is a very complicated tapestry. You need to have the emotionality. You need to have the times you feel like crying and you don't. You need to have the times you can be aggressive. You need to have the times that you can be violent to protect your family. It's very complicated. And you can't teach that, especially to the young generation, in spite of the constant propaganda they have coming in their ears, very easily. So I break it down to a very core message. And the core message is that I have financial freedom, so it's hard to tell me what to do. And I have sexual access because I'm respected by women. And I have a good network because I'm respected by men. I break it down to those core things. And those core things are what I build my, that's how you build the tapestry of masculinity. Because if you don't have those three core things, you can never build the rest of it.
Okay, so the core to Tate is financial freedom, which would mean financial success. Sexual access, and he breaks this down into I'm successful, so I have sexual access. Now, again, this is where I have some quibbles, because when it comes to sexual access, traditionally, the way that manhood worked was you channeled that sexual access in exchange for, you know, marriage and commitment to one woman, and then you built a family structure, and the way that you modeled manhood for your son was to take all the aggressive instincts that Tate is really great at exemplifying, and then you channeled them toward the building of a civilization built on the fundamental building blocks, which are families. And a family is not just father and various children by various mothers. A family is a father plus a mother plus children. The sexual access is a symptom of a broader good. The broader good is the marriage. Sexual access, which again, I think of as kind of a crude term, mutual sexual gratification and love that you find with your spouse would be a better way to put this. But If in his term, sexual access, by the way, all evidence shows that sexual access is much higher in marriage than it is outside of marriage, right? There are very few men who are going to have the sex life that Andrew Tate apparently has. Most men are going to have a gratifying sex life because they are married to a single woman, which is good. That is an act of good. Again, there are three elements. There's financial success, where I generally agree men have a duty to go and provide and create. Two, when he says sexual success, I would define sexual success, frankly, as being in a loving marriage where you have lots of kids. And finally, a good network because of respect. And, you know, again, I agree with that. I agree with that. But the way that you generally create a good network, by the way, is by acting like a good person with other people. If you're a good person with other people, you have a repeat business that then forms around you. People want to be associated with people that they believe are moral and have principle, for sure, and also people who treat them well. And so he's not wrong about, I would say, all three of those things, although when he comes to sexual access, I think that his view of that is very different from the traditional view. I think it's less successful, I think it's less durable, and I do not think that it actually exemplifies the kind of masculinity that builds societies. Alrighty, so listen, Andrew Tate, he's not going away, he's not being disappeared, and his voice continues to be very loud, and he has a lot of interesting things to say, so as he says them, I'm sure we'll be analyzing them.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.